watering down some culture. What does that really mean? Well, let me give you an example. We all know that way too much spice can be taken care of with some cream and sugar. We do it all the time with our butter chicken and paneer tikka masala from that takeout curry in a hurry stop, don't we? But whether it's for traditional ethnic food specifically or it's for our culture as a whole, how much watering down is actually good? My name is Isha and this podcast is called Culture Chaos. Having spent all of my life as a proud Mumbai girl, my mind sort of went for a toss when I moved abroad. And since the past 5 years, I have been traveling from one country to another and have lost count of how many cities and houses I have moved. Culture chaos is what the state of my mind is. All my experiences of life away from home, trying to just make sense out of things. This is what I mean when I say watering down culture. Try to remember how we explain something quintessentially desi to someone who is not at all familiar with India or Indian culture. For instance, how do we explain the festival of Diwali to someone? Or how do we explain the sari and the dhoti as outfits? While simplifying things for a foreigner, we still end up calling our food a curry and we rarely come up with a better description for Ganpati other than him being an elephant god and Hanuman a monkey god. This is what watering down a culture means. Coming up with descriptions and simplifying ideas and practices in order to make it more universally understood. Over the years, the more we have intermingled with cultures, the more we have found the need to water things down and develop ideas, concepts, explanations, and recipes which can be more widely accepted by the masses of the world. I mean, look at how Holi became the festival of colors. But then again, it was not just festival of colors. It went on to becoming a marathon thing in the West. And now it's become like a legit color run, which is a little beyond me. But hey, at least we tried. And an even bigger and better example is yoga. It became so big and so wide that now some people don't even know that it's an Indian thing. Is it the same yoga that Patanjali meant to pass on to the world? No, but it is still one of India's most prominent gifts to the world, and the initial yogis who came to the West and tried to spread the art do deserve a credit. It is these initial immigrants who brought their treasure troves of knowledge on to the West in the early days. And they were the ones who realized the need to water things down. The idea was to reach out to a wide audience and spread some practices which were then very limited to just our country, both culturally and geographically. Obviously, everyone saw the potential financially in the wealth of these unique cultural practices from South Asia, and globalization was really demanding an intermingling of cultures. And making that thing which was ours more global. Our spices had started doing that centuries ago and our food shortly followed. Yoga came in a little later and then came the dot-com, IT and finance booms which made Desis a big part of the mainstream immigrants. As an immigrant in North America myself, I find Chinese and Italian immigrants as the most interesting bunch, and someone from whom we can really take some examples. The first thing is that they mass migrated to the West way before us Indians. And we should study how they evolved and adapted their culture beautifully while watering it down to just the right amount where the masses could accept it and embrace it. Result, an American probably picks up a to-go order of General Tso's chicken and fried rice way more times in a month than he probably cooks his mother's barbecue chicken recipe. and pasta and pizza are almost the national foods of North America. Like, look at how spaghetti and meatballs have found their way into the childhoods of every North American born child. Have the Chinese and the Italians retained their culture? Yes. But while holding on to what's truly theirs, they have managed to create a version of their roots which is for the masses, and it is because of this version that they are accepted and embraced with such a high level of acceptance and really a lot of love. Because let's face it, among all the difficulties of adjustment that an immigrant goes through, one of the longest and toughest battles he fights is one of acceptance. Now, if creating a milder version of butter chicken which finds a spot in the palates of the masses is instantly going to take us that one step ahead in being accepted, why not? And so what if that butter chicken for a Desi might be nothing but a sorry excuse of a Punjabi dish with nothing but tomatoes, cream and sugar? What that watered-down butter chicken achieves might be way bigger than probably holding on to the authenticity of the Punjabi dish and keeping it limited to the self-proclaimed gatekeepers of the Indian culture. And don't get me wrong, I am all for being the flag bearer of my Desi culture and my roots, and I get that it is our responsibility to hold on to our traditions, to preserve and protect our culture, and to not get lost in the whole clutter of globalization. So far, we have done it really well. Our children, no matter which country they are born in, still speak their mother tongues. We still celebrate our Eids and Diwalis with the same pomp, and we still spend most of our lives in nostalgia about our childhoods in India and try to recreate some of the magic in our lives abroad. Bollywood still rules our life, and we will never lose the taste for our food. So we have done a good job in holding on to our traditions, and we have made a lot of it accessible too. Our places of worship are open to all, and obviously we have made our food very accessible by adjusting the spice levels of the curries, and most importantly by generalizing and calling them curries too. So we have done a decent job so far. But my question is, where do we draw the line when watering one's culture down? When does it really go too far and start being offensive to our roots? Well, honestly, I don't know. Because let's face it, guys, when it comes to culture, one of the most abused words is authentic. What really is authentic culture? Is it an authentic tasting dish or an event celebrated in an authentic style? I mean, who decides what is authentic? And if something is constantly evolving and adapting to the needs of the current times, then how exactly can it be authentic? Then the question becomes, should we just stick to the culture the way it has been as we know it? Or should we continue to adapt it to suit to the environment that we live in today? Should we continue to follow the same techniques, practices, and methods that we have heard of our ancestors following? Or should we redefine them ever so slightly so that our future generations can decode these practices? For me, I would rather fine-tune things in order to retain the flavor of my culture and make it easy to swallow, rather than being really rigid and being at the risk of losing it entirely by the time the next two or three generations go by. Whether we call it watering down or creating a new version of it, the onus or the responsibility is in our hands to keep it moving and create a legible version of the culture. If not for the masses, then just for our future generations to come. The more globally authentic we can make it, the more chances there will be of being able to understand this culture and take it ahead. With that comes an end to my today's episode. Stay tuned for my upcoming episodes every week, where I share my stories about searching for comfort and navigating life away from home. This podcast is available on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Savan, or your preferred podcast app. You can find more content for Culture Chaos on Twitter and Facebook. I would love to hear back from all of you, so feel free to write to me on my email. You can also leave your feedback in the form of a review on iTunes. Thank you for listening. This is Isha, and you're listening to Culture Chaos.